This week, the three Footsketeers are back. Horace, Ben and the Foot Economist are reunited to answer all those big Foot 18 questions. Are squad battles viable? One to watch trading? What should I invest in? Gameplay tips, the verdict on Team of the Week 2, and of course, player reviews in the form of dynamite discards and informed impressions. I'm your host Ben, and you're listening to a huge Foot Weekly podcast. It's FIFA 18, it's week two, and it's the return of co-host Horace. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good, thanks. Always good to join on the pod.
Yeah, especially when we have the third host, I suppose, Jamie, on the line as well.
The third musketeer.
Jamie, how are you doing?
I'm good. Enjoyed my 1 week siesta and, you know, happy to be back.
Yeah, well, siesta in the sense that you were sleeping because of being unconscious, or?
Yeah, for the most part. A lot of sleeping.
Okay. And this is, of course, @foot_economist for those who are joining us just this week. So, Jamie, the reason why you were away is actually quite interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, so I was driving to brunch, you know, I think it was a Sunday morning, Saturday morning.
And, it was a Sunday morning, yeah.
Sunday morning, yeah. And we were sitting at a stoplight, and someone came up behind us and rear-ended us, got us good. So I ended up missing the pod that we were scheduled to record. You guys heard about that last week, and was in and out of the emergency room. It wasn't beat up that bad. Like I'm like completely fine now, but it was just really a precautionary kind of thing. The nurse there told me that I had a concussion, a minor concussion, but actually specifically told me that if I had any plans to play video games, that I should scratch those off my calendar for the next 3 or 4 weeks.
You must have just thought at that point that you were like dreaming.
I couldn't believe it. I was like, yeah. What do you mean? Like FIFA literally comes out today, or like
that's like next. So specific as well.
Yeah, unbelievably.
It was like tough. And I was sort of just like sitting there hoping like, okay, now you're going to give me a note for school, or like you're going to give me something that I can like use for...
Yeah. Yeah, balance this out, please.
So. Wow, so yeah, pretty interesting. But you have actually managed to go to a doctor who was slightly less cautious,
right.
And have managed to play the game.
Yeah, one of the jokes on Twitter was I put out like a... You know, with those that follow me will know that I'm like, I love memes, I love GIFs. So I put out like a tweet with like an angry Ronaldo saying like, you know, gets a concussion just before FIFA 18 launches. And someone replied saying that you should just go get another doctor. So that's what I did. I went to a general practitioner who was like my normal doctor. And he told me that the concussion wasn't nearly as bad as what it originally looked like, and that I could go back and play FIFA to my heart's content. I don't know if he knew how emotionally invested I was into FIFA and how riled up I could get, but he said video games are okay.
It's still a week until weekend league though, isn't it? So
right,
yeah, you've got a bit more recovery time before
there's some runway.
The stress really becomes real.
Right.
And actually, talking of which, you were just saying that you have managed to play some games. I know, Horace, you've managed to play as well. So, and we haven't heard either of your thoughts on FIFA 18 at all. So let's start with Horace. What do you think of the gameplay? How are you adjusting well to defending? Are you scoring a ton of goals?
I'm actually not scoring a ton of goals yet. I found the defensive adjustment more straightforward than attacking. I feel like I've not worked out like what my attacking style is yet in FIFA 18. Like I am scoring goals, but I just feel like I'm working quite hard for my goals. I feel like I'm doing passing a lot. It hasn't quite clicked. It's coming. But defensively, actually, like was less of an adjustment, I found. I know, obviously, it's been completely revamped, but I think the way I've defended in previous years, it wasn't such a sea change for me.
Yeah, I think I've noticed that as well. I think the fact that in previous years, well, last year, I don't think I ever fully adjusted to letting the AI do it for me. So I think that in a way, maybe it's been a bit easier to adjust. And I haven't conceded. When I concede lots of goals, it's normally when I'm scoring lots.
Yeah, so, yeah, there obviously are some very high scoring games you get. Like I've had a couple of 7-6 is my most ridiculous win.
I had
so
like
far.
An 8-7. It's just ridiculous. I think I was in draft when like both teams had terrible defenses and all the top attacking players. But what are your thoughts, Jamie? How are you finding it? I know you were pretty big on the AI defending last year.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I sort of leaned on last year was the AI defense. I just knew how, like, when and where I could lean on it to get me out of tough situations. So obviously coming into this year, I knew from as soon as I started playing the closed beta that it was going to be a big adjustment for me. But there's a couple guys that I watched on YouTube that had really great tutorials. Wars of Legend was a really good one. 30 Mike had a tutorial that I watched. And honestly, the biggest thing for me has been the new mechanic where you can power up your tackles. That has completely changed my defensive, you know, my thought process as I'm defending. Like my first, I don't know, 15 games, I didn't even know there was a thing. I didn't know that you could power up your tackles. And as soon as I figured out that you could do it, the way that I would like approach tackles, like, you know, before I didn't know that when you were running side onto someone, I thought it was just, the move was to spam tackle. And then they would do like the push and shove sort of pull thing that they do in the past. But I found that it's like, for example, far more effective to power up like a pretty powerful tackle when you're running side on. And then if you have a good, strong defender, they'll actually just push them like miles off the ball. And then you can just turn around, dribble up the field. And starting counterattacks from that has actually made it some of the difficulties that I've had on the attacking side of things sort of go away, because I'll be able to, you know, sort of gamble on some of the higher risk tackles in the middle of the field where I'm not necessarily up against the wall on my defensive end. And because the range from a high powered tackle, when you do it like 3 or 4 bars, is so large, it can catch someone off guard. And then counterattacking from there is actually pretty simple with, you know, how quick some of the strikers are this year. So.
Yeah, mm-mm. I think that's actually definitely ties into what I was saying about my attacking style not quite clicking yet, in that I think I've got quite a slow build-up play. And if someone is able to just get all their players back and have their defense set up, then the defensive changes don't really make such a difference for them. They've still just got all the bodies back. But on a counter-attack, when someone's having to try and defend one-on-one, that's where people not being as good at defending this year can kind of catch people out.
I have found, though, that people, because they're having to control defenders more, if you do like a slow build-up, you can actually trick people into doing things that perhaps last year they wouldn't have done, like pulling their defender out or like making it, like drawing a foul or a penalty, more so than perhaps last year when people were just hands off and not trying to tackle you. So I guess that's maybe an advantage for slow build-up. And actually, I've started to get into it more, and maybe this is something, because I've played a few more games than you, maybe you'll find the more you feel it out, you can still play that style. Because
yeah, definitely.
Very recently, I found that I've managed to play more possession style and actually got that. There's an achievement for scoring after 10 passes. And I remember I last year, or was it the year before, it took me like over 100 games, like 200 games to get that.
Yeah.
Because was just so like counter-attacking and sort of a couple of passes, counter-attack goal, that I think, I don't know, I do feel like there's some potential.
It was some one YouTuber I remember seeing, they got that achievement in like April or something last year, because how they'd been playing, their play style was so direct that they literally just had never put that many passes
together.
Never put
10 passes together for a while. That's incredible.
Crazy. So this is a question I have as someone who hasn't played too many games yet. For you guys, what I find when I'm on the attacking side of things, at least, I find that every time I score, I feel like I've created sort of like a unique goal, right? Like in FIFA 17, you could just sort of like, you know, run down the sort of the sides of the box and then either like you do an RBA across or hit a low driven. And like that was sort of like the meta that always worked. But in like 18 so far, I haven't really found like a consistent formula. And I find that I need to be creative and like sort of come up with something every time. As you play more games, do you find that you fall into sort of like patterns of goals or how's it kind of play out?
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because I think actually that is something that I suppose does happen early on in a game, doesn't it? Because people don't figure out what the like meta is. But I do definitely agree cutbacks have been nerfed massively. Like it's so much harder to score cutbacks.
They're getting to the touchline and cutting it back, which was a sort of 85% goal last year, that's kind of dead. Like it can happen. Like the RBX or RB square crosses can be effective, but not so much short range. More if you're trying to like play it across the 6-yard box on a counter attack or something.
And actually, if you double tap it now, does a ground cross. And
really?
Just a side point, that's actually way easier than
RB cross.
Just as a motion. Yeah. Apparently, they decided to do that. I think it was one of the devs at the event, and they decided they'd just leave that in because so many people would be doing it anyway and it didn't make too much difference.
But yeah, Jamie, your point about patterns, I think, is like really very true. I think certainly by the end of last year, I had kind of, not sure how many, because it's quite an arbitrary idea, but like just a bunch of certain ways that I would build up an attack, and I would do it almost without thinking. And that's because I played like 2,000 games last year. Like, you definitely just learn and internalize those patterns. And there's no way you'll have that for a new game this year because so many of the mechanics have changed. And I think because we've got so many new mechanics, both attacking and defensively, it's probably more of a change than we had from 16 to 17 and probably more of a change from 15 to 16. So those patterns you'd kind of built up maybe over several years, a lot of them are now not working as well.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think it's probably, I think it will come for all of us, I suspect. Like, you, there, people will find patterns that
work. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Like, I kind of like the creativity.
Yeah, definitely. At this stage, touch wood, I think, and from what I've seen so far, it will be more, it will remain more varied than in previous years, but equally, I'm sure, just by the nature of it being a video game, there will be certain things that are more effective, and people will find those out.
And I talked last year about how I was excited for this game, the fact that crossing was effective, the fact that you could probably, you know, cut in a bit more because of that, and there were more options when you're out wide. And that does seem to be the case. I found when I've come up against people with narrow formations, I seem to have an advantage if I have players out wide, which I wouldn't necessarily have said last year was the case. And also on top of that, crossing, especially early, is actually quite good and quite satisfying. Like, I don't feel like it's happening too much. Like, maybe, again, players will exploit it eventually, but you can score some quite nice, like, scored a quite nice diving header with a Boubacar, and yeah, just like nestled into the side net, and it was like really satisfying.
I think the first goal I scored in an online game this year was a diving header, actually. It was very satisfying. I've not scored one since, but it was very, very satisfying. I was like, ooh, maybe crossing is going to be my thing.
Yeah.
It's not my thing.
And also, I think crossing, quality of crosser does make a difference. Like, I'm finding the gameplay promising, I think. I don't know, how have you found it, or have you played a few more?
Yeah, I'm definitely enjoying it. But as I said before, I think I just need to play it more. Just need to get that full adjustment and learn the game properly.
I mean, I have played some draft games where certain players, I mean, they're better players, but they just seem to, like, if you don't have a decent keeper, they're just scoring 100% of
their
shots.
Up against a guy that had R9 and R7, or CR7, if you want, and that was one of my, I think, my heaviest loss that I've had this year. It was like 5-1, 6-1 or something, and a hat trick for each of them.
But just, that's going to be just because they're
kind
so
of unstoppable.
Clinical, yeah.
I did have ridiculous. Like Jordan Pickford in goal. draft kind of screwed me.
Yeah, I've started building my draft from the back
because interesting.
It's just so much more important because you can score with most players.
Yeah.
and you're bound to get a decent couple of attacking players in the draft. I've been doing that. We were talking about draft last week. Incredible the difference between playing draft before release in that EA access period and playing draft afterwards. Partly because I guess the people coming on don't have as much game experience, but like I won the draft loads over the past week.
Yeah.
During EA access, like I don't think I won it.
So what from the pre-release on Tuesday onwards, you found
Exactly.
Well, I guess the pool of players would have increased like tenfold, like, or more.
Exactly.
Sure. However many.
And actually, it's worth noting for previous years, I'd probably suggest, if unless you're like an Elite One player, that you play squad battles during EA Access and then go into the draft when it comes out, just to sort of maximize
sort of
your
in
points.
Future years.
In future years. That's going to be the way forward. Talking of which, we've had quite a few questions about squad battles, actually.
Yeah.
I know, Jamie, you're not particularly informed, so you'll probably be interested to hear about this, because have you played it yet at all, or if you're not?
I haven't played it yet, no.
I mean, you'll like enjoy playing it a bit, but I have to say I've found it a bit of a grind. I don't know what you thought.
Yeah,
about.
I think so. I've not had that much time to actually play this week in EA Access week, and up until sort of Monday this week, I was playing a fair bit more. But since pre-release on Tuesday, I've actually only played a handful of games. But in that first week, I did play quite a bit of squad battles, and initially was really enjoying it. Kind of feels so much better playing the AI than in any previous year. Kind of you get varied play styles. Feels like the AI does sort of make mistakes. They don't just do the same thing. Kind of even on quite low difficulties in previous years, they would often just play kind of perfect possession, and it would just be very dull to play against.
So
whereas now they take risks, they try and get forwards, and it is more varied and more interesting. But even now, just a week in, I feel like there's very little chance of me playing all 45 squad battles games in a week.
Once weekend league starts, there's no way I'm gonna put any huge amount of time into it, because, and then maybe I'm not gonna get the reward, so maybe I won't play at all. But like for now, it's perfect because it's the only thing you're gonna get decent rewards.
I think it's
for.
Something where if you play, say, sort of 10 games over the course of a week and you get good results in those, like that's not that much time,
right.
And you can get
yeah
probably gold three.
We're gonna have to 10 see how good it pans games. Out.
I mean, yeah, we don't know what the balance.
It all
is
depends
be.
On how many other people are playing, I guess, yeah, which is the interesting right. thing about it. And I wonder when. I mean, and there are advantages. Like, I might play if you know, say I'm about to go off some, you know, go and do an errand or something, then I can leave it paused while I, you know, there are
yeah, that is definitely a benefit.
Situations where you probably may end up playing a couple of games, and also those points do, you know, it's not like you have to play all four at that point, so you can play a couple here, a couple there.
Yeah.
But the, I think I'm just really disappointed that they made it so structured in squad battles, because the idea it was a kind of casual mode, but if you want to get the decent rewards, I unless there's a huge drop off in the amount of people playing. Which there may be, because Foot Champs hasn't started yet. You need to play a lot of games. And in fact, over a weekend, if you're playing all the Squad Battles games and you want to play Weekend League, you could potentially end up playing something like 64 games across the weekend, which is just obscene.
Yeah, I think that'd be... I mean, I think didn't you work it out? If you were to play every Weekend League game and every Squad Battles game over the course of a year, it's well over 4,000 matches.
Yeah,
which
well
is
over
a lot more than most professional players play.
I've never seen anyone general. With it. I've seen people get like half that maybe. Like, that's the upper end, like 2,000 games, isn't
well,
it?
Well, I think I probably played 2,000 last year, and I think you potentially played a couple
more than
me.
That's true, I guess,
But it's unusual to see someone with more than 3,000.
Yeah, that is huge, yeah.
Do you think it's EA's intention to have us play all the games for Squad Battles and all the games for Weekend League? Or do you think that they're just trying to create two separate tiers?
I think the idea is it's an alternative. I think it's basically, if you want to do... It's a competitive mode, but against the computer.
And it has good rewards.
And to get the top tier rewards, you have to commit to it. And committing to either Weekend League or Squad Battles means you're not putting the time into the other one. Mm-hmm. Because realistically, it's that if you to play all of that, because obviously you get no rage quits against the computer.
Yeah.
So 24 games over the course of a weekend, that's going to be actually like comparable to playing a Weekend League almost. In terms of total time, I mean, it'll be slightly less even if you do get a lot of rage quits, but it's a really big time commitment either way. So yeah, I mean, maybe it is slightly disappointing that it's not more casual.
Yeah, I think
it'd be quite nice to have something that was a proper break from the grindiness of the Weekend League.
But it does feel quite grindy, I think. That's the problem. It's also quite amusing that there's some slightly rude squad names that sneak into there.
Yeah, because it is randomly selected, so you do just get like Gary Glitters under 11s or whatever that you're coming up
slightly
against.
Suspect things. And also the teams that you face are sometimes massive disparity. Like, I faced a starter team in one game, and in another game I faced, because it was loans, they had like R9 and all, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I was seeing, Nepenthes did a quite interesting video breaking down kind of what you want to be aiming for to maximize your points out of it and stuff. And he came up in his, like, the set of four games that he happened to be on. Like, he came up against two silver teams. Yeah. I'm not sure
if like
come
a bronze
up against
a silver,
silver team
mix.
Yet.
Yep.
Yeah. I've had, like, pretty consistently gold teams whenever I've played it. So that kind of disparity in something that I guess is obviously less competitive than Foot Champs, but still competitive, is potentially a bit unfair.
Yeah, there's quite an interesting thing that you can do, which is, I was thinking, if you're going to miss some games, you can actually like use, because you can refresh the opponents. Like, it backdates to like the last sort of set of opponents. And if you're not going to manage to play all of them, you can actually like play the easiest ones and refresh, and then more easy ones and then refresh. So there's probably ways that people will come up with where they can kind of make the most out of it as like a little bonus earner, maybe, if they're playing casually during the week. Because I mean, I know I didn't have to qualify that much for Weekend League last year. If I, you know, I'd normally
once
manage.
They did the gold three auto qualification.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe it is something that I might dip into during the week if I have the time. But to be honest, like, Weekend League is just so much more challenging. I think it does have that appeal that actually that will never really have.
Yeah. I mean, one final thing on it from a point of view of the tiers. Ben, you were saying how it's kind of frustrating that it's so tied to how many games other people are playing. Potentially, now we've had full release, if they count it on every Ultimate Team that exists, then those percentage tiers could go way down.
Significantly drop, yeah.
So I don't know if people have to play at least one Squad Battles game in a week to be counted. So we'll have to see. If those levels do drop dramatically, then that could imply that it, over the course of the year it will actually get easier and you'll have to play less to get the better squad battles rewards.
Yeah, no, that's quite an interesting point. I mean, what a lot of people are asking is, once Weekend League comes out, are you going to play it? I know you haven't played it, Jamie, but do you think you'll play it?
No, I mean, I struggle as it is to find time to play Weekend League, so I you know, unless I have a really boring week, I don't think I'm going to be playing much squad battles. One thing I do think is interesting, though, is that, you know, as I watched the break, I watched the same video as you, Horace, about the breakdown that Nepenthes did, and it was really fascinating. He did a great job. One thing he was talking about is how all of, like, the top players right now are playing on Legendary instead of Ultimate, and basically just because Ultimate is just way too hard. Like, no one can get, like, a consistent performance up on the Ultimate difficulty. And I'm just curious if, like, you know, I've seen, like, you know, some top players like A9 Skills and, like, you know, some of the other, like, YouTube personalities play against the Legendary and do well, but I haven't seen any, like, the top tier pros, like some of the hashtag guys or, you know, what the other play against Ultimate. So I'm curious to see how they would do against them.
Yeah. To be fair, actually, at the capture event, I saw hashtag TAS take over from A9 Skills in a game against the Ultimate AI.
Yeah.
It was not the best squad I think they were playing, but he took over at 4-2, I think.
4-2 down.
4-2 down, and it ended 6-2. So, I mean, it's really tough. Although he didn't have much experience of playing it.
Yeah, and dropping in at halftime can be quite tricky.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's pretty interesting. I think one of the other big things for me is, like, the meta is different, and if I'm wanting to do decent in the Weekend League and I'm not playing that many games a week, then why would I, like, sort of confuse my playing style?
I've found, particularly if I've played a couple of squad battles games and then gone into an online game, my mindset of how I need to play is very different.
Exactly.
And often I'll concede a couple in, like, the first 30 in-game minutes of the online game, and then I'll, like, get back into online mode and come back into the game after that.
It's
potentially tricky if you're trying to remain competitive online.
It's not a bad thing to play in that sense, and it's actually quite interesting what the AI does sometimes. You know, like, learning a bit from it could be helpful, but I wouldn't suggest, you know, if you want to be competitive in the Weekend League and you don't have much time, there's just no point in
it. Could be it could be a decent way to warm up. Like,
maybe.
You know, they always say, like, you know, just jumping straight into a Weekend League game, you usually lose that first game. Like, you have a higher percentage chance of losing it. Maybe if you start with a squad battle game.
It's probably better than not playing.
Yeah.
As long as you kind of make sure you're fully aware that you're going to have to switch mentality.
Get that muscle memory going and get warmed up.
But yeah, I suppose that's kind of summarizes our thoughts so far on squad battles. We have to see how it develops across the course of the year. And I'm really interested to see some gameplay of, like, the very top level players playing against the AI, and especially, as you say, on the top difficulty. So yeah, I think that sums up our thoughts so far on gameplay and squad battles. No doubt there'll be more in the coming weeks, but actually you've got to head off very briefly, Horace, don't you?
I'll be back for player reviews in a little bit
for part two.
For part two.
Around for that. I think you've got an informed impression, don't you?
Yeah, it's a good one.
Exciting. Okay, see you shortly. So we'll get on with Foot Economist and talk market.
Enjoy.
Hey guys, it's Matt HD Gamer here, and you're listening to the Foot Weekly Podcast.
So time to get into the market and trading stuff with you at Foot_Economist. First of all, we'll talk about squad battles because we were just talking about it. I think that's probably the best way to start things off. But of course, we will talk about One to Watch a bit later. So the rewards for squad battles come out around about 1 a.m. UK time, which is kind of interesting. How do you think that's going to affect the market on a weekly basis?
Yeah, I mean, first thing I think of, as the game mode matures, sort of like settles into like the regular player base that's playing squad battles. We were just sort of talking about this. I think it's going to split the player base into two sort of tiers, the sort of hardcore Weekend League competitive players, and then the sort of more casual squad battles players who are maybe not necessarily as good at the game, but are, you know, putting in the hours and grinding out squad battles. And I think those players, you know, sort of stereotyping them, just generally aren't going to have as much knowledge about, you know, the market and how valuable players are, or, you know, what SBCs are going on at a given time. So I think they are going to be more likely to, you know, pack players from their rewards at, you know, 1 a.m. UK time on Mondays and then list them up at prices that may not necessarily reflect their true value at the time, whether, you know, that be because they just don't track the price or they're being pinched by an SBC, whatever it is. So I think, you know, during that hour, After the after awards first drop, I think there's going to be a pretty good space where you're going to be able to get some really good deals. I also think it's going to be interesting because that market, that sort of tier of casual player, has never really had access to a good way to grind out coins, like huge amounts of coins. I think this is going to be a really good way for them to do that. So I think that's going to obviously they're going to have a lot. They're going to be able to sort of focus their demand on higher level players, which they haven't been able to do before. And I think just in general, sort of on aggregate, I think we're going to see that the higher level players are going to be even more expensive on average relative to what they were in previous titles, just because there's a different sort of player base that's now going to be able to have access to those players. So like, 17 out, obviously it was the people that, put in FIFA points and were, good at weekend league. Now it's going to be players that are willing to put in the hours and grind out squad battles as well. So I think that's going to be interesting. And I think another thing that's going to be sort of like my third and final point about this is, after weekend league, we sort of have the general sort of sell off Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and it could be this squad battles could be an interesting sort of counter to that sell off, because just sort of generally when we have rewards, whether it be weekend league rewards or monthly rewards, monthly rewards are totally different. Never mind about monthly rewards, but when we're going to have squad battles rewards, that's going to be, when people get more coins, they're going to turn around and usually put that back into the market. In the form of buying players for their team or whatever it be. So it actually could balance out the weekend league sell-off, which could be something that is going to be interesting for traders, because then you're going to have a smaller window to buy that sell-off Sunday night if you're planning to invest and sell for that Thursday, Friday rise.
And actually, it's quite interesting because you've got that weekend league sell-off combined with the fact that the rewards come out. There could be certain periods where you get quite a dip in the market. Whether that will be kind of softened by the fact that the rewards will probably be opened for UK players in the evening on Monday, maybe it will change a bit because it will be staggered. It won't be like a sudden influx. Right. And also people, of course, get those coins to buy players with. So there is that to kind of balance it out a bit as well. What I'm quite interested to see is whether you'll see players that are more effective against the AI becoming more valuable. I don't know. I was thinking someone like, you had all those DOSed informs last year, which were totally useless. I can imagine him being like really effective against the computer because you just can't. I mean, you can counterattack the computer, of course. It depends on the opponent's custom tactics.
Right.
No doubt there is going to be certain techniques people work out over time on how to dribble the AI and things like that. So it would be interesting to see how it goes. But it would be quite fascinating if you did see interest in players like DOSed.
That's a really good shout, actually. I know that. Trying to, early as we can, trying to pick out some of the things that might be helpful for that, squad battle sort of meta. The 4-star skill moves, I think, is going to be really important because the Berber spin is like, it just throws the AI through a loop. Like, they have no idea how to respond to that. And if you look at one of the things that Nepenthes said on his video about how to like break down the legendary AI was like just Berber spin everywhere, because like it's not like a human where the human will, after you do like the fourth Berber spin, is going to read it. The AI just every time just like is completely bamboozled by it. Maybe 4-star skillers that are pacing it on the wing are going to be more valuable.
It's quite interesting because you compare that with online, where actually I think the Berber spin isn't as effective as the new spin move. Basically, all you have to do is you're running, whatever direction you're running, flick the stick back, so back the way you were coming from, and then flick it to the direction you want to go. And that will perform this new skill move, which is, it's kind of like a one-footed roulette, but at a 90-degree angle.
It's a really strange looking animation.
Yeah, it's quite weird, but it looked quite cool. And it's actually quite effective, especially online where people don't necessarily know of the skill move. They may not have actually had it done against them yet. So it's a good one, worth doing. But that's a bit of an aside. Let's get back to the money. we've got obviously that whole thing about squad battles, which is going to be an interesting development over the next coming couple of weeks. But what we've had recently, which is the big thing, is that one to watch. And on that, what do you kind of think of the market at the moment? What's your kind of summary of this early game period?
Sure. I mean, if you'll allow me, I'll go back all the way to EA Access. We've sort of had two big dips. Obviously we had the early web app start, and then we had the EA Access time where Xbox players had a chance to hop on for 10 hours. Well, some people more than 10 hours, depending on whether or not you knew some cheeky workarounds with the EA Access subscription period. But so that was sort of like the preliminary dip for the Xbox market. The PS market had sort of stayed in that primal, maybe not the right word, but like sort of stayed in that early stages where there's not a whole lot of coins. You know, really the only coins on the market are from daily web app gifts and from people opening their starter packs, discarding the stuff that came from that.
It was kind of disappointing we didn't see that on Xbox, because actually it's a real kind of gold mine for traders in terms of they're the only people making money. So really good traders have the potential to pick up some of the like top
those
level
primal
players,
times are just
for,
so
for
good
mad prices. primal PlayStation days.
So PlayStation sort of stayed in that that golden time of trading, whereas Xbox sort of right off the bat had people that could load up FIFA points. So it was really interesting that the PS players actually had a distinct advantage over the Xbox players, because they could track the PS prices or predict the PS prices by looking at what prices on Xbox were. So that was sort of like an interesting dynamic that developed. And then as we move into the release of the Icon and the Ronaldo edition, we saw that immediately prices dipped pretty hard right when they both came out, worldwide release. Obviously people were getting on opening their loyalty packs. They were loading up FIFA points for the first time if they didn't have EA Access. And I think you saw particularly the PS market took a nosedive, because as you get towards the end, some of the higher level traders are starting to funnel their demand to some of the higher level players. Obviously both markets took a pretty big dip. And then as we moved into the day after that, prices rebounded. Obviously people playing a couple games, they're focusing maybe not on foot draft anymore or whatever, they're doing squad battles, and they're looking to build teams and start grinding out divisions. As they're looking to make their teams, some of the lower tier cards started to rebound in particular, where some of like the higher tier super ultra expensive cards also started to go up, because the people that have FIFA points like sort of funnel all their demand to those cards, whereas interestingly you saw some of the mid-tier cards and some of like the marquee investments from like previous years, like the Discard Informs, the 83 Plus, they actually lagged behind and actually stayed pretty low, and I think are still relatively low compared to how inflated some of the super ultra ultra competitive cards are, and then some of like the OP sort of starter tier squad players are. And then finally moving into full release, where we had One to Watch, we had Player of the Month Mane, we all sorts of stuff going on in the market. Prices dipped again, especially some of the high-end prices took a dip sort of temporarily. So high-end players are actually sort of unique in that when they take a dip, they rebound the quickest. That was sort of interesting to see. There was sort of like a 4 or 5 hour time period where when One to Watch just first dropped, the world release was happening at virtually the same time, prices took a pretty good nosedive. But since then, they've actually recovered. Sort of on the topic of One to Watch, it was interesting to monitor their prices after release. What sort of happened is they started really high. I think everyone sort of knew that One to Watch, based on prices from last year and sort of how they trended, that it was going to be a really good investment. And a lot of people were looking to make, obviously One to Watch investments. They started really high. As the weekend went on, and we got into our first batch of games, you saw that they actually took a pretty solid dip. Some of the marquee ones took a dip, and I think this was sort of after the first wave of investors got their hands on the cards that they were looking to buy long term. I think we actually saw sort of like an overreaction from the market and from the traders who overbought, and then sort of when things sort of settled down and people were still opening packs because they were still doing, squad building challenges or, burning through FIFA points on FUT Draft or whatever it is, that the supply sort of like overtook this sort of exhausted demand from the traders and investors. And you also had people who are trying to like do quick flips with the One to Watch cards like during the weekend for that first weekend. And they're selling it to like zero demand. So you actually saw the prices dip a little bit. And a lot of people were able to take advantage of some injury scares. The one to watch curse has come back in full force.
Yeah, that Morata injury. I mean, it looked quite bad, but actually, because it was a hamstring, but actually, you never know. I mean, Conte was saying it wasn't as serious.
Right, yeah, exactly. I mean, you could... That's another thing, too. I mean, people that followed one to watch closely last year know that it is one of the most fickle, prices on the market. Like, it'll go, from 0 to 100 when one person, falls down and holds their ankle. So taking advantage of sort of sentiment like that, where, people think the world's ending because Morata, hopped off the field because he's pulling his hamstring, and, sort of counter-investing while everyone's panic selling is actually a really good tactic.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I suppose one question which I have about this is there any chance we might see a one-to-watch SBC? Or is it likely to be something we'll only see come the January one-to-watch period?
Yeah, if I had to bet, I don't think they would do a one-to-watch SBC for this release.
I mean, prices aren't low enough now, really, right? Like, so because nobody's at.
They didn't do it, last year. They didn't have a one-to-watch SBC last year for the initial release, and then combine that with the fact, like you said, that the prices aren't low enough, so there's no motivation for them, if you will, to push their prices up by having an SBC that requires them. So no, I don't think they'll do them. But I mean, to your point, that could come up at some point, and it's probably going to come up in January once again when they do the second batch. So if you can get your hands on some really cheap discard-esque kind of one to watch players, then you could be in the money later down the line.
So that's one to watch done for now. What about team of the week investing? I mean, in terms of maybe players who are going to get a team of the week, like you could have done with players who are going to get a one to watch.
Sure. I mean, that's because it's still early days and there hasn't been enough time so that players can sort of get this holding capacity of like supply, if you will, so that not being in packs 1 week is going to make a big difference. Because we are early in the game, as I said, being out of packs for a whole week is actually going to have a pretty significant effect on their supply. It's actually going to pinch their supply and push their price up. So if you can sort of hop on early and as you're watching, sort of anticipate players are going to get informs this coming week, you can actually just go ahead and invest in their gold card. And then you'll see that their prices rise. This method gets less and less effective as the year goes on, just because, as I said, the supply of that card that's already in players' clubs goes up.
I also think people maybe get smarter as the year goes on. They're more likely to realize the players playing later in the game that, oh, this player's out, like, he's an inform, he's probably gone up a bit. I'll sell him out of my club. I'm not using him. But in terms of that kind of team of the week inform investing, there is, of course, a lot of discard informs at the moment. I did pick up some myself, just thinking there's a slim chance that like the Mane SBC or I don't know, something around one to watch, could it require an inform? Because there were just so many discards on the discard informs on the market. I feel like they might well take advantage of that to put them into an SBC or something, because they have a lot more gold informs this year. And I think that's had quite an effect on the supply. So I don't know, could we see it earlier than last year? I think it took a few, maybe even a month for them to drop a team of the week requirement SBC.
But... yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting. The landscape for investing in discard informs has changed because, as you said, there are going to be more gold informs this year because silvers jump right from a silver card to a gold inform. So that's, just in itself going to change the game for inform investing. Now, what's going to be interesting is there's going to be sort of two tiers of inform investing, discard investing. You're going to have like the low end that you're going to be investing in, like the 78s. And like, I think that's what the silvers go to when they get a gold inform. I think they go to a 78. Whereas if it's a gold inform getting their first gold inform, it's a gold card getting their first gold inform, they go automatically to an 81. So whether or not EA do rating requirements that sort of block out that lower end inform, remains to be seen. But as you said, there are a significant number of discard informs that you could really just pick up for like 9,900 coins, like almost at their discard. Yeah. And
like all of the ones I picked up, I'd be making like a 40 coin.
Right. Yeah. And if you have the coins that you can just sort of hold, there is no reason that you shouldn't be, having those in your club. And if you don't intend to actively use those coins to trade, I mean, obviously there are better ways right now, especially this early in the game. If you're turning, if you're talking about like, alpha return per, time period. I said that poorly, but that's discard informed investing probably isn't the best way to go right now. But if you don't intend to use your coins actively and you don't need them for a squad, that's a go-to. You could also do it by loading up on 83 pluses. Some of those are really low right now, especially some of the cards that are like, as you get into like some of the higher tier ratings, like, you know, Verratti, for example, you know, isn't necessarily cheap right now. But if you think, you know, for example, there's going to be something with, you know, the Scream card, the Scream promotion coming up in late October, and you think that they're going to require high end players for an SBC, then investing in something of Verratti right now, high end players could be a good look.
No, that's a really good point. And so finally, let's talk a bit again about that Mane SBC. I think it was a bit of a goldmine for traders, wasn't it? They kind of ticked all the boxes in terms of the stuff that people were investing in.
Yeah, I was shocked. I couldn't believe that, one, they did the SBC, and then, two, that the requirements are so sort of obvious and you know, similar to the ones that they've done in the past. You know, for example, the minor requirement that they had, that was one that really everyone's been talking about. The Senegal players, the sort of journey, the Mane's journey, that was another one. Those were all ones that we've had from previous years. I would have put my money on them really trying to change it up, trying to throw traders off, particularly for the first SBC, sort of say like, hey, like, you know, history is, you can use it as a guide, but it doesn't necessarily, you can't, it's not going to repeat itself necessarily.
Yeah, it kind of flies in the face of the expected or whatever there's, you know, yes, yeah, is
right.
Slogan is.
Yeah. Or you could make the argument that it does, right? Like, you could say expecting the expected is expecting the unexpected.
Well, yeah, I suppose, yeah.
Mm.
I mean, I know they have tabs on these things, so maybe they noticed that actually there wasn't as big widespread investment in that SBC than perhaps people might have thought. But it was pretty a pretty surprising twist in a weird way, in that it wasn't surprising. But, it'll be interesting to see what they do further down the line with future SBCs. But before we get into part two, where we'll talk about informed impressions, we'll have a team of the week rundown, and of course dynamite discards with Horace. Actually, I think you're going to head off. You've got to get off. Mm. So the questions that we've been asked this week, two slightly different ones. First one is, which one to watch players will get more than one inform this year?
Well, that's an interesting question. Obviously, it's if I knew the answer to that, definitely I would be a FIFA millionaire. But, well, not that I'm not already, but maybe a billionaire. if you just want to rattle some names off, I guess, I think Neymar is going to get, barring injury, he's going to have a heck of a season in terms of FIFA cards. just watching what he's been doing and his new home has been pretty incredible. It looks like he's playing in Liga de Brazil again. Like, he's doing like skill moves and rainbow flicks and all kinds of stuff that I think he finally has the freedom to do, which is really cool to see.
And I mean, the other players, of course, you know, you've got the other big guns like Morata, Lukaku, Lacazette, because they're strikers and they're going to score goals. You would have thought they're likely to get cards. And then Neymar's PSG compadre, Mbappe, also looks like he could do quite well. Maybe it's more of like an outside shout, Balde Kitadiao, or however you say his name, whichever order it is. He's actually had a bit of a composure buff this year, as a side point.
Really?
And actually, as a result, looks like when he got an inform, he could be quite a valuable card, even if he doesn't get two. That first one could be pretty good. But yeah, Yarmolenko as another player as well.
Sigurdsson's a shout too. Yeah. Watching some of Everton's most recent games, Everton doesn't look like a particularly strong side this year, but Sigurdsson is essentially running the show for them, especially when Rooney's not playing. This past weekend, so
yeah, he's also definitely one to watch. So that question came in from Sharmake. Our next question comes in from Swiss Chicken HD, and he asks, do centre backs need pace? Do centre mids need pace? In general, what players need pace?
I think to answer your question, all players need pace. Depending on what position you're in, it's obviously more important than others, but you know, especially at this point in the year, when we're all sort of all adjusting to the new system, having pacey center backs, defenders, pacey center midfielders is really important, because, you know, especially defensively, when you're sort of adjusting to the new system and you make a mistake, you overcommit on a tackle, being able to recover with pace is really important. just because, you know, obviously you're going to be making a lot of mistakes as you're adjusting to the new system.
I think that's a really good
point. Do you think that, like, compared to previous years, I guess this is, you know, sort of a follow-up question to this. Do you think compared to previous year, is pace more important in FIFA 18 or in past iterations in FIFA 17 and FIFA 16 compared?
It's funny. I always find with these things, it's quite hard to gauge whether it's just this time of year when the game's just starting out or it's like an overall thing. Because I think last year I would have said pace was super important in FIFA 17 and it was important. But actually, I don't know whether it was as important as previous years. And I'd say that maybe yes at this stage, but actually, I think that is one of those, because it's you know, with many of the cheaper players you're using, pace is like by far their highest stat. So it feels like that's the key thing,
right?
Because obviously that is the key thing for many of the players you'll be using. Someone like Muriel, who's like many people will have used, his big thing is his like pace and strength, but that's because he's a lower rated card with a lower overall. So he's kind of, obviously I'm using him, and that's a way that I can get one up on another player. It does feel important, but maybe, as I say, when I'm using players slightly later stages who have better technical skills, those will like shine through more. And I have found certain players with good passing useful in their own way.
I've found that players sort of on the point of like passing and sort of not needing pace, I found players like David Silva, Iniesta, Ozil, some other sort of players like that, I found them really effective this year playing with them in foot draft. You know, obviously I'm not going to be making darting runs into the box with them, but you know, sort of linking up play and starting attacks from the nucleus that they can create with their passing ability is actually really effective this year, just because, you know, possession and build up play, I think, is a little bit more effective and needs to be part of your varied attacking play. So
yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think on that note, it's time for you to leave us. You've got to head off. The kind of relay race that is this week's podcast continues with Horace coming in for part two. Thank you very much for joining us, and I'll look forward to your insights in a future week.
Yeah, great. Yeah, thanks. Always a pleasure.
And before we return for the second half, just very quickly, if you want to send in your own question, you can do so by emailing footweekly@mail.com or tweeting at footweeklypod. Hello and welcome back. Horace, did you have a good break?
Yeah, lovely break as always.
It's always great, the break. And of course, we're ready to get into the team of the week, which is exciting because we haven't done it for a while together, actually, have we? It's been quite a few weeks, and your usual team of the week rundown has been missed. So do you want to kick us off with the big players, I guess, that feature?
Yeah. I mean, the marquee player here is obviously that centre forward Messi. Position change, ridiculously good card. I mean, going to be good all year, but especially good at this stage of the year when there are so few ultra high rated cards around. If you pack him, well done, you're set for coins for a long time. Likewise, kind of with that Aubameyang card, really really strong card. I've come up against his regular one in draft and he kind of destroyed me. Morata, also quite high rated player for this team, looks decent. He's a very strong physical player as well as having a bit of pace. Pjanic, very very strong midfielder. David Silva, obviously in real life a brilliant player, not so useful in FIFA. But Azpilicueta, also in this team, looks really, really strong. I think we've both used that inform card in draft and found him really good.
He's kind of like Ramos, slightly like
bit smaller, obviously,
but he's better in terms of like his agility and like stopping a dribbly player coming at you, which is key in this game, of course.
Yeah, rounding out the starting 11, Goulam looks a very solid left back. Also Algerian Brahimi, left mid from the Liga NOS. Looks quite good, very high dribbling, maybe slightly lacking in pace for that wing position.
Yeah, and I'm slightly disappointed by the upgrade on this card. It's just not that huge when you compare it to his regular card, when you look at some of the other upgrades that are going around.
Yeah. EA seem to be being quite generous in general. He's not been treated that well by this inform. Another slightly disappointing card in the starting lineup, Hilton, very low pace, but quite high dribbling and passing for a centre-back, so maybe as a central centre-back in a back three, but I think that's being quite optimistic. I'd be, unlikely to use him. Adan looks a decent goalkeeper, though.
He does.
The Spanish league could end up being quite cheap if a hell of a lot of packs are being opened over the coming week.
And he reminds me a bit of that, is it Lopez got one last year, I think it was.
Yeah, I actually really enjoyed that card. Yeah. I was a big fan of that. On the bench, another quite good-looking keeper in Ligue 1, Samassa. Very, very tall. I think he's 6'6".
Yeah.
With 86 diving and reflexes. So he could be quite good because there aren't that many outstanding keepers in League One this year. Also on the bench, Zaza, after his terrible time at West Ham, seems to be doing quite nicely in La Liga.
That card actually looks really good because he has quite a solid agility, above 80.
Surprisingly good, given that he's also very, very strong and physical.
And of course, the very ironic 87 penalties or whatever. of course, I'm sure everyone remembers that very interesting penalty he took. And it's funny, actually, there's a few West Ham strikers, ex-West Ham strikers, doing quite well. But yeah, he's got rewarded with the inform. And apart from the three-star skills, three-star weak foot, I think it's a really, really good well-rounded card.
Yeah, a couple more informs on him. I mean, his shooting's really, really good already. So
looks great.
Looks like a decent card. Then we've got like a collection of the lower rated gold cards that are getting those nice upgrades from silver that EA are doing this year. Not especially useful, many of them, unfortunately. Conrad, Sindgren, Valencia, who I think you packed.
Yeah, I packed him like twice.
Nice. And Mullins, an American striker. And then a couple of silvers as well.
Yeah, it's interesting because I was complaining last week about silvers being really useless because it was just this 70 rated silver, and these guys are closer to kind of like the border between gold and silver where you want those kind of players to be, so maybe these guys would be a bit more usable than the guy last week, so maybe they'll continue to do that. It may just be because they're high rated bronze cards, but what do you think about the kind of fact that these silvers are becoming gold straight away? Are you happy with that? You didn't hear your thoughts last week, obviously. I've commented on it, but
yeah, no, I personally quite like it. I think if it marks the start of a pattern of trying to get better, more usable cards into some of the more obscure leagues throughout FIFA, and if EA really stick with that, I'd be really, really happy, because in past years you sometimes get like one player in an obscure league who has an outstanding season, they get a bunch of informs and they're a really good card, but they're just impossible to link because there aren't the cards around them in that league, or they're from an obscure nation in that league, and you just can't link them up well to get them into a team. You have to really compromise the team. But if we're seeing like quite consistent decent upgrades to sort of usable level gold cards in these leagues, then it'll be more common that there's a sufficient number of usable cards in those leagues to actually create like a little triangle in the corner of a hybrid or something.
Exactly. And actually, I think your first player is going to be a guy from the Dutch league, which perhaps isn't a league which is often used in foot, although perhaps towards the end, but certainly not to start with.
Yeah, I definitely came up against a few teams built around the Dutch Tots last year. But up to that point, definitely not. But yeah, this guy looks really, really good. The player I'm talking about is Jurgen Locadia. Don't speak Dutch, so I'm not quite sure of the pronunciation on that. But he looks like a really, really solid card. Two-star skill moves, unfortunately, but a four-star weak foot, which is useful. And he looks like just a bit of a tank, to be honest. 86 strength, looks decent. And I was looking at him with Hunter. He's got that nice split on his acceleration and sprint speed, where his sprint speed by default is a bit higher. So you put Hunter on him, he gets 94 acceleration, 96 sprint speed. And he also gets 94 shooting overall, with 96 positioning, 94 finishing, maxed out shot power at 99, 91 long shots, 86 volleys and 94 penalties.
That's really good.
For this stage of the year, that's outstanding.
It really is. And I mean, he looks quite good in terms of agility as well, like not terrible at 76 for a sort of larger body type, and decent ball control and dribbling as well. And link-up play looks all right.
Yeah, his passing. I mean, he's got 83 short passing, 80 long passing, 77 vision just by default on the card.
Yeah.
Like, he could almost play as a cam if he had slightly better dribbling and skills.
Maybe with engine. Maybe with two-star skills, I'm not sure, but yeah.
Yeah, hard to say. But I mean, keep an eye on him. If he gets another inform or two even, he'll be a monstrous card this year.
Yeah, and I think the next player I was going to talk about is another player that I've actually been fortunate enough to pack. In Roma's El Shaarawy, and he's a man that we absolutely loved last year. His SBC card was pretty out of this world, but one huge difference last year is that SBC card had 4-star weak foot, and he's got a massive downgrade to 2-star, which is it's a huge game changer, really.
It's kind of devastating.
And I mean, when you think his original silver card, which everyone loved, was 5-star weak foot.
Was 5-star weak foot, 5-star skills back in the day. That silver card going for like 100k, I think, I remember at times.
Yeah, it was mad. And this card does look really good despite that, I think. If you put 100 on him, like we did with Locadia, actually, you get 99 acceleration and 99 sprint speed, which is obviously crazy. And it probably makes up for his kind of 58 strength. But also gets 91 finishing, which is very good. 89 shot power, decent long shots, 93 volleys and 97 positioning, which is really good. And then he's also got 89 agility and 85 balance, and then good enough ball control and dribbling that you don't need to boost it with 90 ball control and 88 dribbling. So yeah, he looks like a really exceptional winger. He's got high medium work rate. He's not the smallest, and I think in this game with dribbling as it is, I think he'd really be fun to use. I haven't got a chance to try him out, but I'm going to work him into a team to maybe let you know how he is in future weeks. But he does look pretty exceptional. Of course, he's got that finesse shot trait, which I really, really enjoy. Although he seems to be able to finish most things this year, so I'm not sure it's going to be as important.
Have to see if they patch keepers a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, no, definitely.
Well, for the last player that I wanted to talk about, I've got someone who definitely doesn't struggle in the weak foot department. Got 5-star weak foot, 3-star skill moves, unfortunately. But you can work with that. And it's Wagner Love from the Turkish League. He had a really decent looking team of the season last year. And he seems to have started off this season in fine form as well, scoring a hat trick. And I think his team came back from 3-0 down to 4-3. It's pretty impressive. But I think this card looks really, really good. Similar to Lacardia, if he gets another couple of informs, we'll be looking at an outstanding card. But as it is, this is still pretty decent. I mean, dribbling-wise, 84 agility, 89 balance, alongside 84 ball control, 85 dribbling, with 80 strength by default. Looks really, really decent. I was thinking if you put Hawk on him, maybe kind of up that strength to 85, which just tips it over that point where you're starting to outmuscle a lot of fullbacks fairly easily, particularly with that 89 balance. And with Hawk, his shooting looks outstanding as well. 98 positioning, 92 finishing, 96 shot power, and also 88 long shots. Like, he looks really, really solid. And not slow either, with 89 acceleration, 80 sprint speed. And one last thing on Wagner Love. He's not the tallest. He's kind of 5'7", 5'8", in game, but he has 81 jumping by default. Obviously, that gets boosted if you use Hawk to 91 and 91 heading accuracy. So I think with the way crossing is slightly more effective this year, he could definitely
seem like running onto something.
Yeah, he can definitely still do a job for you on that, particularly with kind of almost maxed out positioning if you've boosted it with a chem style.
Yeah, we should mention for all these players we've just been covering, actually, having mentioned the importance of composure earlier, they're all kind of similar in that they're around the kind of 75 composure mark, which is okay. You'd probably want something a bit better. But another thing to note about composure is that they have been boosting composure on informs this year.
Yeah, so that's something they definitely weren't doing in previous years. A bit like, I think in the past, there was one FIFA where sliding tackle never got boosted a few years back.
Yeah, that was bizarre.
That was really odd. So you'd get these incredible team of the season cards that had like their base sliding tackle. But no, yeah, they seem to be boosting composure. I noticed definitely Sadio Mane, he's got a nice boost on his player of the month card. So that's something to definitely keep an eye on, because that means that players who previously their outstanding cards could be let down by their composure will actually become more effective the more informs they get.
For sure.
I think, Ben, you've got one last player to talk about from the team of the week.
Yeah, I do, actually. A German player. I feel like you should pronounce it because you have some German qualifications.
Sasha Bigalke.
Bigalke. Okay, yeah, the way I was going to say it was like Big Alky, like he was sort of had a drinking problem. Yeah,
may well do as a German.
Well, yeah. Right, no need for stereotypes.
Apologies to our German listeners.
Okay, so one of the reasons why he's so good is he has 4-star skills and 4-star weak foot, which obviously I'm a big fan of, but not many German strikers do have 4-star skills and 4-star weak foot.
Almost none.
I think.
He may be the only one in the game.
Yeah, possibly. And the only disadvantage is he's playing in that third division of sort of German tiers of football, which is a new league this year, actually. But with the way that informs are working this year, it's possible that he might have some friends to, you know, partner up with. To you know, really get the most out of him. But the key thing, or two stats which you're looking at, which are phenomenal, are agility and balance. 99 agility and 99 balance. I mean, obviously, it just doesn't get better than that. And you think, if he gets another inform, how good could he be? He's obviously quite weak, as you can imagine, for a player who's 5'6". Got 81 stamina, which is good, and 77 jumping. So those are the two stats where he's kind of okay in the physical department. But he's got really good acceleration at 94. He's got 80 sprint speed. He's got 84 finishing and 90 shot power with Maestro, as well as decent volleys, decent positioning, 85 vision, 92 free kick accuracy actually with Maestro, which is really strong, and 91 short passing, and then decent dribbling at 89. And I think Maestro is probably the thing to use because of the fact that his agility and balance are so high, and you don't waste anything using Maestro there. And he's actually got some pretty useful traits with long shot taker, playmaker, technical dribbler, and taking finesse shot style free kicks. I have no idea what that is, actually. But
I think it's, to do with run-up.
You get the
90 degree run angle,
which you can
run up.
Kind of do yourself, I guess.
Yeah, you can now set it up. Yeah. Maybe there is something then to do with how much curve they can get on free kicks.
Possibly.
Interesting, actually, that he's got long shot taker, because he's only got 51 long shots by default. Obviously, you can boost that a bit with a chem style, but you can't get it above 66. So I mean, maybe that'll balance it out and he'll still feel decent from range. Because yeah. he does have very high shot power. But
yeah, yeah, interesting.
It's like odd one.
Quite a weird one. Anyway, the interesting thing about this particular player is we've had an email, sort of like an informed impression from a listener, which, you know, we're always keen to hear from. If you want to do your own, just send an email, footweekly@mail.com. Or you can tweet us, but obviously that's only 140 characters of review. So.
Or 280.
Oh, 280 now.
You never know.
Big things. But let's talk about what John Ford had to say about this particular German inform. He has said that he is an absolute star cam with Maestro applied, which of course we said Maestro would be the cam style to apply. And he said that he's also a menace on the ball and that his high agility and acceleration kind of make him feel like you're playing FIFA 15 with Giovinco, which anyone who used Giovinco around the previous FIFAs knows how ridiculous he actually feels. He's saying that he feels a lot better than Giovinco, which is not surprising because he does seem to have, you know, quite ridiculous stats. And Giovinco doesn't have maxed out agility and balance.
Yeah, not by default.
Like this guy has. And he said that in divisions he scored him 10 goals in 6 games from the cam spot. But yeah, that's a nice little informed impression from a listener. And as I said, welcome to send in your own. But I think you've got your own to give us as well.
Yeah, so this is a player that you guys actually mentioned in the Team of the Week roundup last week. And I listened eagerly to hear what you had to say. I've used him for maybe 10 games or so, mostly in squad battles, admittedly, but a couple online. And it's Charles Aránguiz, who plays in the Bundesliga and is a central midfielder from Chile. So there's that strong link to Arturo Vidal that I think you guys highlighted last week. Mm. Obviously, he may well be outside of quite a few people's price ranges at the moment. But Aránguiz shouldn't be. He will be discard, pretty much. And he's actually a really well-rounded player, just with basic on him. He gets 81 pace, 87 dribbling, 81 shooting, 68 defending, which isn't ideal. But his tackling stats are actually 77 and 74 for standing and sliding, respectively. He's got 93 stamina, so he'll keep going all game, 74 strength, 92 agility, 91 balance. So he actually feels quite strong on the ball and he can turn very, very quickly. If you use kind of L1 or LB dribbling with him just to kind of take a quick touch, you can kind of use that almost instead of shielding, I find. Mm-hmm. If you've got an agile player, kind of you can just roll your opponent if you've got your back to them, which is really, really strong. And his passing is outstanding. 92 vision, 93 short passing, 93 long passing. This is with basic chem style.
Yeah, so you're only getting a plus 5 on those.
So you're only getting a plus 5 on those. If you wanted, you could really focus and
pretty much max out
his passing. And on top of that, he's also got 92 shot power and 82 long shots. Admittedly, I'm not sure I've actually scored with him, but I think that's much more to do with the position and system I was playing him in rather than his abilities, because I was playing him quite a deep-lying player.
Yeah, yeah, sure. And actually, I mean, that stamina just looks like a key feature.
He did just keep going all game for me. And to be honest, there's not that much to say beyond I highly recommend him as a kind of budget player. He's just going to be a tier above most non-informs around that level just because he's so well-rounded.
Yeah, I'd quite like to see like him and Goretzka in a midfield.
I could imagine that would work really well because Goretzka can make up for the slight lack of physicality and defensiveness in Aránguiz's game.
Yeah, yeah. Even though he does have like 77 stand tackles.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's pretty all right, isn't he? So yeah, very interesting informed impression there. And I think we're ready for the second coming of Dynamite Discard. I know you've brought one this week. I've got one again. I think your player's slightly more attacking. Mine's a bit more defensive, but they're both French.
Yeah.
Interestingly, so you can obviously use them together if you wanted. Your particular card is actually a non-rare, in fact.
Yeah, so he's a lot higher rated than yours, but because he's non-rare, he is pretty much discard, I think. I bought him very early on because I was building a League One side. Because I happened to pack a couple of decent League One players in my starter pack, so I thought I'll build around them. And it's Florian Thauvin. So he had many informs, but he had a team of the season last year, which is quite a nice card. And this base card of his this year, 82 rated, is actually really decent. I used him with basic chem style, so you could certainly really like focus in on his shooting or his passing or boosting his pace a bit. But across the board going forward, he's actually really, really good. He's like quite agile. Acceptable stamina at 71. With basic, he's got 79 finishing, which is decent, but 87 shot power, 81 long shots, really useful. He's got 4-star skill moves. Very good passing, actually, really good for link-up play. Kind of 82 crossing, which I was experimenting crossing into Balotelli. Worked quite well as a pairing there, as well as 86 short passing, 80 long passing. and really good dribbling stats, actually. 88 ball control, 91 dribbling with basic.
And of course he has that high-low work rate, which is quite nice on a very attacking winger.
Yeah, certainly. One thing that's slightly let him down is sprint speed. I would say he's got quite an acceleration-heavy pace.
Yeah, I can imagine
that. So he's got 82 pace by default on the card, but only 77 sprint speed, which is slightly disappointing. And no particularly effective traits either, unfortunately.
Yeah, but flair, I suppose, is okay.
Yeah, flair is definitely useful.
Yeah.
I mean, for a discard winger, though, this year, I think you can't go far wrong with him.
Yeah.
I really, really did enjoy using him.
And, of course, submitting him into an SBC or something with his H2 rating.
Yeah,
it's always quite definitely handy to have him around, I guess. So the player I've got, as you say, is much lower rated, but a rare card. It is Jeffrey Kondogbia, who's kind of the next big thing, I think, before Paul Pogba came along. But he's kind of accepted his lot as a 76 rated rare card. But one of the things that I really liked about using him is that he's not your typical kind of big defensive midfielder. He is a CDM, but he's got 79 agility, which makes a real difference with engine applied. And he's also got 82 ball control and 87 dribbling, as well as 88 short passing and 82 long passing. So he can, and decent vision at 77. So he's got that kind of balance of stats, which allows him to be a playmaker as well as like a physical presence at sort of 6'2".
Yeah.
With that 86 strength and 84 stamina, 74 jumping. And then he's got decent defensive stats, just base sort of level standout is 78 stand tackle. And he's not slow, 78 acceleration, 74 sprint speed with engine. And he's got a decent long shot on him, which is not there in the stats, but I've scored like a decent goal with him.
He's got very high shot power.
He's got high shot power. And he's a nice card to use. And he's one of those players that, although he's got a high attacking, medium defensive, he kind of plays your kind of like box to box, but he doesn't get too far forwards. He's not going to completely leave you exposed if there's no player behind. He'll stay back. His positioning
well,
seems good.
I mean, as a broader point that I think we have mentioned in the past, that instructions do seem to have slightly more impact this year. If you set a central midfielder to stay back, then it just is like that little bit more effective than in previous years.
Yeah, definitely. Anyway, I just encourage people to try him. He's so cheap and he feels really, really good on the ball, and he seems to just pop up and do good things. Like, it's hard to explain, but you know, every now and again you find that player who seems to just like make it work, and he's one of those players, and I've really enjoyed using him. I wouldn't use him as a lone CDM just because he's not as disciplined as someone
his defending stats aren't outstanding.
Yeah you could boost that, but it just doesn't seem worth it because he's effective going forward, and he's a good player, and he's got three-star skill moves as well, so he can pull off a roulette if need be.
Cheeky roulette.
So yeah, I think that brings us to the end of this week's podcast. It's very good to have you back.
We'll look forward pleasure to as always
hearing from you again very soon, no doubt. All that remains is probably to say to everyone else, have a great weekend, League, if you don't hear from us before.
Well, in a week's time we will all be tearing our hair out as per usual,
realizing we know nothing about the game at all. But yeah, enjoy your week and we'll see you very soon. That might be the end of the podcast, but the discussion doesn't end there. We want to hear your thoughts on Foot 18. Drop us a tweet at footweeklypod or email footweekly@mail.com. If you haven't subscribed already, you can do so through a whole range of options by going to footweeklypodcast.com/subscribe, or just search Foot Weekly through your podcast provider of choice.